I wanted to go to the source sheet. Last share we had spoken about the Gemara presented the concept of Erva, Seah B'Isha Erva, and Kol B'Isha Erva, and Lenny wanted to know, was hoping I was going to say something about something, but I'm not going to say anything about Kol Isha. But I do want to talk about, primarily about the question of Seah. Just a little bit about Kol. I think we addressed some of that already. So the complicated thing about the issue of Seyar, if one had read the Gemara in Brachos alone, so it's clear from a number of comments that the Rishonim make that what defines Seyar be'isha as erva, what defines the hair as erva is hair that would normally be covered. The question, of course, is, well, how do you define what is normally covered, which becomes particularly complex in a society like ours, in which it is normal for married women to go with their hair uncovered. The overwhelming majority, you know, of women in the United States and the Western world do not cover their hair when they go out in public. Married women, single women, all women. So there are some subgroups that still do, but more as a religious act as opposed to, I don't think that anybody would say that a married woman walks around with her hair uncovered, that is somehow, you know, lewd and obscene and inappropriate and so on. It's just the norm. So ordinarily one might have suspected that one would have said, okay, so perhaps just as the Rishonim say that hair that normally comes out from underneath a woman's head covering, the term is temes, tzadi mem pas, the sara sheyotzos mitachas tzimasan. So the Rishonim say that there's no problem. It's not erva. There seems to be no iser associated with that item. So the question then is, why would we even suggest that a married woman should cover her hair? So there is, aside from the sugya in Brachos, there is a sugya, there is a passage in the Gemara in Ksubos in the seventh parak, which is what's on the source sheet that I wanted to take a look at, which I think will shed some light on the difficulty in understanding the sugya. Now, I will tell you at the outset that there are a very small number of Achronim who argue that, in fact, a married woman doesn't have to cover her hair today, precisely along these logical lines, but they are very much a distinct minority. The question then is, the minority position is relatively easily understandable. The question, what is the sort of mainstream position? So the Mishnah in Ksubot, seemingly unrelated to anything we're talking about, speaks about what are situations of grounds for a husband to divorce his wife without paying ksuba. You have to just remember that in the time of the Mishnah, number one, polygamy was permitted still. Number two, a husband could divorce his wife against her will. Both of those practices were banned, and the ban, the chayram, is Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom banned both the practice of the permissibility of polygamy and also banned a husband from divorcing his wife against her will. Now, there are exceptions to these haramim, but generally speaking, they apply in most circumstances. Now, in the time of the Mishnah, there was no barrier to a husband divorcing his wife against her will, except that it could be expensive. And the Gemara King Subas is a bright that talks about various stages of the enactment of the Kisuba that Shimon ben Shetach instituted to protect women, to basically create a situation of shalotehe kala be'inot mahutsia, that it would not be easy to divorce his wife because there's a cost to it. Now, there are situations, that we take it as a given that a husband can, generally speaking, not be forced to divorce his wife against his will. Now, so that rule has exceptions. When a husband has behaved inappropriately, or is behaving inappropriately, so there are some situations where there are grounds for forcing him to give his wife the get. Similarly, in the time of the Mishnah, where ordinarily for a husband to divorce his wife, he would have to pay a ksuba, there are situations in which a husband divorces his wife and doesn't have to pay a ksuba because she has been behaving inappropriately. So he has the right to divorce her, but we don't impose it on him and check the penalty, the cost of divorcing her. So the Mishnah here, on the Chaim Beis Amat Aleph, in Ksubas, says that the following women, a husband has the right to divorce his wife if she does and behaves in certain ways, and he doesn't have to pay her the ksuba, because she is, in effect, violating the contract. So the Mishnah says, Overis al das Moshe Yehudis, one who violates the law of Moses and the law of the Jewish women is, I think, the best way to translate it. They talk about das Moshe and das Moshe.
America's going on the red list, they said.
Okay. I'm not sure how that fits into the Mishnah Sivos, but the Mishnah, what is the difference between Das Moshe and Das Yehudis? What distinguishes them? We might be tempted to say, and this may or may not be correct, and we're not going to really explore this, Das Moshe sounds like it would be the Oraisa, and Das Yehudis sounds like it would be the Rabbana. Das Moshe would be those things that the Torah imposes upon us, and this precipitates, if it has certain standards, in this case for women, in terms of whatever they do or don't do. And Das Yehudis would be some type of din Rabbanan or Minha. So what is now the Mishnah?
That's commonly understood.
Well, no, that's how one would understand it at first glance. That might also be the way it's understood. I think people, you'll see why people assume, let's say the following. Das Moshe is usually assumed to be a din d'oraisa. Not necessarily related to Erva or things like that. We'll see, Das Yehudis seems to be all related to the practices of tzniut, of modesty that women, that the Jewish women accept upon themselves. And it's often assumed that those things are rabbanah, meaning if the Jewish women decided we're no longer going to do X, so then they don't have to do X.
So Das Yisrael would also be the rabbanah that apply to men and women?
Das Moshe?
Das Yisrael.
There's no Das Yisrael.
Well, we have it. Like by,
Okay, Das Moshe be Yisrael.
Yeah.
That's something totally different. That is a standard, I'll call it,
that has to do with the Mice Kedusha.
I don't want to go into great length. Das Moshe Yisrael, there is a famous statement, called the Makadesh Adait Rabban Makadesh, Askin Rabban Kedusha Mine, the idea of Fas Kedusha. Some Rishonim understand that based upon a condition that I'm a Kaddish woman, but I only want it to be a Kiddushin if the rabbis want it to be a Kiddushin. So if certain things don't happen or do happen in a way that weren't supposed to happen, then it was never Kiddushin in the first place. So those who say that, we say Kedas Moshe be Yisrael to incorporate Das Rabbanim. But that's, right. I think that's very different. That would still be, that's not law for as much as intent or conditioning. Okay. So here, again, that's something different. But here we have Das Moshe and Das Rabbanim.
That's unique to a Kiddushin.
Yes. I believe so.
It doesn't come up anywhere in Halacha or Shas that you don't have to look it up.
Not that I can remember from it. That's not a good riot, but I don't
remember from it.
Okay. Now, the Mishnah says, the Ezo Ki Das Moshe. What would be considered things that she could violate with Das Moshe? Ma'achilato she'enam usar. She feeds him non-kosher food. She'enam usar literally means it wasn't properly tied. It had too much of to confirm it properly. And umisham shatu nida. And she doesn't go to the mikvah, but leaves him under the impression that she has. And she has a marital relationship. Then the lo kotzo lo chala, she doesn't separate chala from the dough. That's very much like machilat she'ena ma'usa. And then finally, the nederes she'ena mikayenes. She takes the dan and she takes that and she doesn't fulfill it. Now, the first three, first the Gemara has an interesting question of how do you know, how does he know that he did this? Right? How does he know that the food wasn't kosher? More importantly, it's not like you could go to a rapper. After all, if she feeds him bread, how does he know whether challah was taken from him? How does anybody know? And unless she tells him, which would not seem to be what's going on. The Gemara assumes it's not that she tells him. So the Gemara comes up with answers. It's very important for other halakhic issues, but not doesn't matter now. And the last one, the Darasin and Makayim, is the Gemara says, because when the Gemara says that Bavon Nidaram Banimesim, that when people take vows and oaths and don't fulfill them, so God will punish them with sometimes the loss of their children. So if his wife is, in fact, taking vows and violating them, I presume the kinds of vows that he can't annul, because if he was able to annul those vows, I don't know why he's blaming her. But truth is, even if he doesn't annul the vows, she's still obligated to keep, she would be obligated to keep them. So these are all violations of things that we might call the oraisa. And the first three are certainly, we understand why they basically breach trust in a marriage, right? If her responsibility is preparing the food and she's preparing non-kosher food, then we understand why that that basically destroys the fabric of the marriage, and therefore he's entitled to divorce if that is true. Okay, so far, so good. The Ezo, he dances with this. Mishnah says, Yotzeh v'rosh ha'puro. She goes out, doesn't say where she goes out, but she goes out and her hair is, well, we usually translate our hair as uncovered. There is another way to translate rosh ha'puro, although probably it's not the best translation here because it's rosh ha'puro, it means our hair is wild. And then if she take her hair and put it in a braid, then maybe that wouldn't be rosh ha'puro. And that actually does make its way into the halacha in a way that I'll explain later.
Rabbi, is that a reference to the sota?
The Gemara is going to get there in a second. The Gemara is going to, yes and no, the Gemara will ask, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
The Tava Bashok, she spins thread in the shok, which, like, what's the big deal? The Gemara explains there's some type of priestess, some type of lewdness or lack of modesty involved in the way she's doing it. It's not that she's, you know, like I imagine here, I don't know if it's probably not so much anymore. Now they're all in their smartphones. But once upon a time, young women, you'd often see them, like the teenagers, would be knitting yarmulkes for their boyfriends. So that would be like cover bashuk. I don't think there's anything inappropriate about it. It's kind of cute.
But
we've confined for those days.
But just to reiterate, this is regarding collecting ksuba.
Correct.
This is really a mominous question, right?
Yes.
But if you do these things, you're subject to the financial.
The husband has the right to divorce his wife without paying the ksuba.
Right.
The implication, of course, is that it's inappropriate behavior.
Right.
Also, because
right.
If it were appropriate, then we wouldn't say why you know
right,
if she's doing
right.
something that's appropriate.
But it's inappropriate, but suitable to a financial consequence.
Correct. I mean, nobody.
Well,
there's
that's,
no,
that's,
you know,
that's the start.
Right. Well, in other words, we're only right now. I don't think there's any onesh, particular onesh based, and at least not under the norm. There's no if a married woman, assuming she has to cover her hair, even with the raisa, if she goes out without her hair uncovered, a bason could theoretically try to force her to observe the law, but there's no specific onesh for it. Then the Mishnah says, umedaveres in kol adam, which, you know, I don't think this means that merely she's a yenta. It means that she's socializing with the men in a way that would rightfully leave her husband uncomfortable. So all the examples that the Mishnah lists of Dasi do this are basically issues that relate to tzniut. Not being in the Rabbanan per se, they might all be Rabbah, it's possible. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to classify certain kinds of behavior. Are they the rights of the Rabbanan? If something is, it violates tzniut, and it's not in the Gemara. So, and there's no specific mention, or even if the Gemara mentions it as lack of not being tzniut, what kind of a prohibition is that? I think one of the limitations of a halachic society, or it's not a limitation of halachic society, but it's the way people in a halachic society tend to think, which is, if it doesn't say it in the book, then it's okay. It's not the question, and I don't mean to sound like that line of the former president, George W. Bush, when during his campaign, he said that he often asked himself, you know, when he's not sure what to do, he asks, what would Jesus do? So obviously we have to do a substitution there. But we sometimes should ask ourselves, Masha Melkech HaDoresh Mufal, what does God want from us? So if a behavior is ostentatious, and not forgetting these kinds of issues, showing off one's wealth, showing off one's intelligence, if it's ostentatious and it's not tzniut, so what is the nature of the prohibition? Why should you not do that? Is it Torah's Rabbanan, or is it simply because it's what God wants from you?
A novel brush of
thought. So that's what comes as the novel brush of thought. So these things here, I don't know the Dasi who this. They're clearly inappropriate. And we might end up assuming that they're asur. But they're the kinds of things, I mean, Daberson called them is even a better example. Yotza Varosha Pula, you can start to give shirim. You can talk about how much hair, all the hair, some of the hair, you can sort of turn it into legalese. Then Midaberasim Kal Adam means she's talking with the men. Does that mean she can't say hello to a person in the shuk? Right? What is Midaberasim? That's not something that can be codified in a strict sense. How many men was she talking to? Exactly what was the tone of her? It's a behavior that has to fit, you know, the Potter Stewart definition, which is I know it when I see it. So, but that's not something that codification generally, that was precisely the problem with the Supreme Court's issue. How do you codify something whose definitions are so gray, even though the ability to define it is very in precise language is impossible, but you understand what you're looking at when you see it. Okay, so now the Gemara, so it sounds like from the Mishnah, there is an issue of Das Yehudis, of a woman at least a married woman. The Mishnah happens to be talking about married women, because if it's a single woman, no one can divorce her without a ksuba. It's just not something for the Mishnah to talk about. So the Gemara now asks a question. The Gemara says that Ezri Dasigu, this is quoting the Mishnah, Yotzer Rosh Hahura. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Rosh Hahura is a raisa. No. A woman, maybe a married woman, going out without covering her hair is a violation of a daraisa. Now before we look at the Gemara quotes Dela the Pasuk, it said, Ufaras Rosh Hashah. When the Kohen performs the Sota ritual, so one of the things he does is they humiliate the woman there and partially unclothes her. And one of the things he does, he is paras rosh ha'ishah. Again, does that mean to uncover our hair? Does it mean to undo the locks or have our hair go, you know, wild? So, the Tana de Rabbi Yishma, we have a braisa that says, as hara libnos Yisrael shalo yetsu b'piru arosh. So it's a warning. That Tana often means technically a low safe, but it's not really a low safe figure, because there's no word of low. And the Torah doesn't tell us to do anything or not do anything. It's just from the fact that the Torah assumes that the Kohen is uncovering the woman's hair, is that it must have been covered in Torah. That's the inference that the Bryce is making. So the Gemara asked the question, how can you list a married woman, at least, or a woman going out in public with her hair uncovered as a Das Yehudis? It's the Oraisa. Now, the Mishnah doesn't say it's Das Moshe. It says it's a Daraisa. So the one only thing that you can infer with certainty is that Das Yehudis has to be defined as a practice of Tzvius, but one which is not necessarily mandated specifically by the Torah. In other words, it's possible that the Gemara is about to draw a distinction to answer the question, to answer the seeming contradiction by saying, sometimes uncovered hair is daraisa, sometimes it's das yehudis. Now, does that mean if it's daraisa, it falls under das moshe? Or does it just mean it's I'll call it a more severe das yehudis? You can't tell from the Gemara. The Gemara answers that oraisa kalsa shafir dam. But das yehudis afilu kalsa nami osu. Now, a kalsa would best be translated as a basket. So if a woman were to put a basket on her head, presumably it would cover some of the hair on top of the head, but there'd be lots and lots of hair coming out. So it sounds like what the Gemara is saying, that the kalsa midaraisa is sufficient, but Das Yehudis demands that even a kalsa is us. Now, if one were to assume, as do, I think, many...
How do they get that?
Well, they're forced to provide an answer. Now, I'll tell you what the simple reading of the Gemara's answer. I can't tell you how they get it. The simple answer of the Gemara seems to be that some type of covering on the head is mandatory midaraisa, and then beyond that is part of Das Yehudis, the practices of modesty that Benos Yisrael have adopted. Now, the reason why that is significant is that if one were to argue, as I think many would concede, not everybody, that Das Yehudis is in fact subject to societal norms, so then it could be that in a society such as ours, a woman, a married woman, but you notice the Gemara has not actually said that. Rabbi Shmuel didn't say that. Mikan lev benos Yisrael. Except for that Rabbi Shmuel is talking about Sotah as a married woman, and our Mishnah happens to be talking a married woman, but both might have a reason to be talking a married woman. There's no Sotah ritual for a single woman, and there's no Ksuba discussion or divorce for a single woman. So what one could walk away from this Gemara reasonably, assuming, that mida oraisa, a married woman, would have to cover some of her hair, but how much she would have to cover would depend upon societal norm. And in a society in which it wasn't normal at all for women to cover their hair, then it might not be necessary to cover anything more than some type of a minimum, whatever kalsa exactly is. Okay, but what does emerge from the Gemara here, and that's why I raise it in the context of our discussion of brachos, is while the Gemara Brachos describes Seya B'Isha Erva, for whatever purposes, and we have to talk about that a little bit, we have spoken about it a little bit, so here there seems to be some type of a separate obligation. The word Erva is not used. We're not talking about Kriyishma. There seems to be some type of independent obligation of head covering. Now, that very minority opinion amongst the Achronim would look at this Gemara and say it's not a real drasha. And when the Gemara asked the Oraisa, it doesn't mean actually the Oraisa, but it means it's not just Das Yehudis, like the minhag that Jewish women have today. The Torah takes note of this practice, because the Torah assumes that the Sotah's head would have been covered. So, so they would have to say that this entire Gemara is not Nasa, and really it's all the same issue. Is the hair for a woman a place that's normally covered, or is it something that's not normally covered? Okay. Now one last step in this Gemara, one last line, which is interesting and very much important. Halacha l'maisa. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kalsa ein bo mishum keruarosh. A kalsa, a woman wearing a kalsa, does not constitute keruarosh, having a head uncovered. So the Gemara says, Habi ba Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera is kind of, you know, stroking his beard. What's going on here? Analyzing. Hecha. Where is it that kalsa is okay? And you should add, where is it that is necessary and okay and acceptable? Ilema bashuk. If she's going out really in public, full public, into the marketplace, only wearing a kalsa, das yehudasi. It is a violation of das yehudasi. Now, let me just review. I'm sure we've encountered this, but maybe we haven't. How do they used to live? What is Chazal's construction of the way they live? So you generally speaking have houses, multiple houses, typically different families, not necessarily, but typically, that opened into a common courtyard, a common area, which was walled. It was not open to the public. And that chotzer would often open into an alleyway. And in that alleyway, let's take the standard case. The alleyway might have been sort of solid on three sides. And the fourth side was open for the public space, for the shuk, for the Rishus HaRabin. And you'd have multiple chateros that had doors that opened into the mavoi. So the houses empty into the chateros, the chateros empty into the mavoi, and then the mavoi empties into the public space for the Rishus HaRabin. So Rabbi Zera says, listen, where is it that kalsa is acceptable and necessary? Ilei mabashuk. Das Yehudasi. To go out all the way in public, only a kalsa would violate Das Yehudas. In your own chotzer. In Cain, lo yinachta bas l'avram avinu sheyushev es tachat filos. If a woman is considered with pivu arosh, if she goes out into her own chotzer, not covering anything, meaning she needs a kalsa, then there's no Jewish woman whose husband won't be entitled to divorce her. Right? Meaning, the simple reading of the Gemara, as is understood, I think, by the Beis Yosef, that in the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe, is that there's no prohibition at all. In the Chatzer, a married woman doesn't have to cover her head. So then where is it that you need a kalsa, but a kalsa is sufficient? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, the Itema Rav Kahana, Mechatzer L'Chatzer V'Derech Mavoi. If a woman was going from one Chatzer to a different Chatzer, but she's going through the Mavoi, which is a more public place than a Chatzer, so then she has to have a kalsa there. In her chatzer, she doesn't need anything. In fact, it sounds from the Gemara, in any of the chatzer, she doesn't need anything. But certainly in her chatzer, she doesn't need anything. In the Rishus HaRabin, a kalsa sense is insufficient. But in this mavoi, in this alleyway, which the chatzer is open into, a kalsa is necessary, but a kalsa is also sufficient. Why does this matter? So it matters because, according to the Gemara, now some afernum find other ways that maybe an opinion may appear in Rishonim. Some will disagree with this, but the simple reading of the Gemara is that a married woman in her own chatzer, in her own house, does not need to cover her head. And the simple understanding doesn't matter, even if there are other people who are there, who are not from her family. Because the normal chatzer, it's not specified, had multiple families that lived in that chatzer. So the married woman don't have to cover the hair in the chatzer. It sounds from this Gemara even, it could be in the other chatzer. I think
so how do we understand that though from the intent of this halacha? Right?
So I think
underlying that.
So yeah. I'll throw the question back at you, Larry, which is the simple reading of the Gemara. That let's just take a look at one passage in the Shulchan Aruch. The next paragraph, just Sifveis. Lo te lachna benos Yisrael, Puros Rosh Vashul. Achas Tanuya, the Achas Ishish. So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber Paskin, that a woman married or Pinuya means single, should not go out with her hair uncovered in the Shulchan.
Yeah, I mean, that's another level of
No, so Now, there are those who say, I think when you read the Rambam for sure, where the Mechaber is taken from, the assumption is, yes, single women also have to cover their hair. Girls at a certain age, I don't know exactly what that age would be, they need to cover their hair, even
so
though they're single.
So much of that is influenced by the time they were apostate.
What's that?
So much of it.
Well, one second. You can make that argument, Josh. The question is...
But it's easy to make the argument when you read the Gemara.
What I'm saying is, the question you have to ask is, for those which would be a significant part of orthodoxy, I don't know what percentage of it, where the married women cover their hair, the single women don't. Right? Now, you have to explain, what do you do with this passage in the Shulchan Aruch? We'll talk about that. But to come back to your question, Larry, is what does that mean? So what does it mean that a married woman, that a Kala gets married, today you see her with her hair covered, and 2 days from now she has to cover her hair.
I didn't think of that before.
So obviously that the simple understanding of that is that the obligation of covering the hair, at least if you don't subscribe to the Shulchan Aruch as literally read, is not a function, certainly anymore, of erva. Rather, there seems to be a separate obligation that a married woman who goes out in public covers her hair. It's not that we think that the hair, uncovered hair is erotic, like, oh, I look that, it's not scandalous. Therefore, when I go into her house, it's not a problem. Maybe if she's in my house, if you read the Gemara, it's also not a problem. But so how can it be that she's in the huts with other people around? So in the same way that there would be, you know, I might walk around, like in public, generally speaking, I'll be wearing a suit because my position demands that, you know, I present certainly publicly. If you come over to my house, you'll probably see me wearing a pair of dress pants and a short sleeve shirt, a little more casual. On rare occasions, I mean, that's scandalous, but on rare occasions, you know, and like a little bit more casual than that, right? If, you know, if you come with me on a hike, so, and you know, unlike Marshall, I won't have Marshall see it today. I won't wear shorts on a hike, but that's, you know, but that's not a secret reason. But you might come to me, you know, in one context and see me in a certain way. You come running with me, I'll be running in shorts and in a short sleeve shirt, right? Is that scandalous? No, but if I were to come in to give shir now wearing shorts, you know, I want to emulate Marshall. Marshall here, I can't tell.
He goes to work like that.
okay, so that's kind of unique, okay? But for the rest of the world, so the point is, you would say that's inappropriate. So is it that you're seeing my legs below my knees exposed and my arms? No. The answer is, there's nothing particularly scandalous about seeing in the appropriate context. So apparently, there is some notion.
Can we just pause for a second here? leaving aside the vicious ad hominem attacks on me, which we'll save for another day. Why is
Marshall? One second. Eitz Hashem Hashem Yoha Hashem Yochia. Okay.
But here's the thing I don't understand. Why would you run in shorts but not hike in the summer in shorts? I don't even understand.
Marshall, one word. Ticks. Okay. Ticks and brambles. Two words. Sorry. With a dream. Okay, so back to our originally scheduled programming. So I think the answer to the question is that if it's not something that's considered erotic, or uncovered or naked, so then appropriate garb and appropriate covering depends upon the context.
But one would argue, just looking kind of at the Muslim world, that it originated clearly.
So I will tell you, I would state very explicitly on the record, when students come and ask me, Shiloh, the answer is when the wives are getting married, when the college come and ask me, I say you need to cover your hair. How much is a separate discussion, but you should cover something. If you ask me, do I find the svara of that very minority opinion in Aharonim compelling? The answer is I do. I find it absolutely compelling. It's clear to me that once upon a time, I don't know what age, it was expected that women cover their hair. You look in Muslim societies, that's why the Rambam formulates the way it does. That's why the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch is essentially quoting the Rambam. And according to the Shulchan Aruch, all women have to cover their hair, married and single. And how you then deal with that in our society, which does it so differently, I can see two ways. I can say, well, maybe it's silly in our society. On the other hand, our society is so porous in so many ways. Just walk around the streets of New York City that it's hard to call it erotic when you see it all the time. Again, we can't describe it anyway because certainly everybody says our single women don't cover their hair. So it's really hard to even, you know.
You have to have a shekel,
well,
it looks better than your...
Well, listen, Ramosha's response when he was asked about a shekel, you know, which typically breaks down Ashkenazim versus Sephardim, Chacham Ovadia was very opposed to it. where Moshe descends in, and basically he says that the only purpose of covering her hair is to remind her that she's married. It's kind of a funny thing, but Rav Moshe was defending the practice, and we didn't want women to have to feel they have to wear a lousy shekel. So Rav Moshe, but in that response, he's basically stating this is not fundamentally a question of tzniut, because if a question of tzniut, you know, then of course it would be awesome. And there, by the way, I'm not going to use the term in polite company, although it probably is commonly used, but there are certain kinds of shekels today that are totally inappropriate. And I'm not going to say what, you probably know the term for this kind of hair. And it has an adjective in front of it. And it's totally inappropriate because it's priceless, not because I'd rather have a woman let her regular hair show than walk out, and, you know, I think I said this last time. There's a general problem in when we talk about the categories of erev and tznius. You know, I think modern Orthodox schools have given up mostly on dealing with the issues of dress code and dress codes for young women. But part of the problem is that if you talk about tznius only in the context of women's garb, you kind of miss the whole point. Tznius applies to everybody. And unfortunately, in our society, it is routinely violated in so many ways, having nothing to do with how much skin you show. Erev was a technical question, but you can go to plenty of places where they are, I'll choose the term, ultra-Orthodox, and you will see lots of the women, single women, even married women, dressed, I'll call it the saran wrap look, where you have clothing that is form-fitting to the body. That is so the preachers is unbelievable, but because somebody thinks, because they check the boxes on how long the skirt went when you're sitting, when you're standing, how long the sleeves go, how much hair was sticking out, somehow you think that you've been yotzei something. You kind of missed the entire point of our religion.
They call it the hot honey.
Yeah,
you know, that's a different point, yeah.
But what you're saying, though, is that according to some sheets, not so much in terms of the erva, but in terms of the heker, a sign that you're covering your head. In that case, the issue is not that the hair should be covered, it's that you're wearing a cover on your hair.
And Ramosha's argument was that you know it, right? The problem with Ramosha's argument, the difficulty with, at least in its absolute terms, is that, well, what if she wears a wedding band, right, instead of covering her hair? That don't certainly remind her that she's married. Ramosha's trying to defend a practice that was common, and he thinks it's important, and he doesn't want to make life harder for the Nosi Sarah. I understand exactly what Ramosha's saying. So I think that, yes, Larry, fundamentally speaking, on a purely conceptual level, if we didn't deal with precedent in halacha, so I find that the logic compelling. I don't, you know, I say, lo mala'ani libi, you know, lavar adibrei most of the poskim to say otherwise, which is why I say that, you know, I follow the majority opinion, but the logically speaking, it is so. We'll read a little further on this, but that I think really is the crux of the issue, which is you have the sugya and brachos that speaks to Sarah B'Yisharava, which I think does reflect historical reality. You have the Gemara in Subos, which speaks about a obligation of a woman covering her hair, not explicitly a married woman, except for it's in the context of the married woman between the Ksuba and between the Parsha Sota. And the Gemara draws various kinds of distinctions of what has to be covered in what context. And these two sugyas don't necessarily mesh easily, because if you assume it's just a societal, you could assume it's a societal norm, but it's somehow binding upon us always, which is kind of hard to fathom that. For example, and I don't know if I said this last week, Kol Be'ish Erva. So if you look at the sugya, I think I mentioned in Kiddushin, Kol Be'ish Erva applies even to Kol Bibur, at least in that context. It was there was no singing going on. And yet, the Rishonim already start to write in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that way, is that it's a problem hearing Kol Zener Shalisha. Singing, the assumption is that that probably was true 500 years ago, maybe even 200 years ago, that a woman singing would have somehow been considered, at least in some ways, in some contexts, erotic. It's still true today, by the way. It all depends what the nature of the singing is, the way the person is behaving when they're singing. But once upon a time, you know, it sounds from the Gemara that could have been all Kol Be'ishah with Erva, or lots of it even if it wasn't singing, and it gets narrowed down because certain things somehow are presumed to be normal. And if you're going to say that by Kol, and I can't prove that it changed, I have a Gemara that talks about Kol Dibur. But clearly the Rishonim say that even it's only calls in there. So this should not logically be any different. So you're really left with the choice of saying that it's all about societal norms, which is what the Gemara and Brachos might imply, or that there's some special din. It's a Veris HaKasav Uparas Rosh HaIsha, whether it's a real drasha, whether it's Rasmach, and it's a din Rabbanim, it still would apply. So that's what we're kind of left with between these two sugyos. Now, the issue that we do have to come back and talk about now is the Kriyas Shema issue. In other words, if the married woman has to cover her hair, then what is the din? Our, at least part of our Gemara was talking about, we've been talking about erev in the context of Kriyashma. And when you see, when you're seeing something, are you allowed to read Kriyashma? So before we get there, I want to finish off talking about the hair covering issue, and then it will naturally segue into the Kriyashma issue. So the Shulchan Aruch in the third source here, I mean the second Shulchan Aruch, the one from Or Chaim, the Mechaber writes that Seir Shel Isha Shedarka L'Chasoso also Likros Shenekta. The hair of a woman for whom it is normal to cover it, you're not allowed to read Kriyashma in its presence when it's exposed. The Ramah adds Afilu Ishta. And so it doesn't even matter, even if it's his wife, which means, I mean, it's clear that even if you believe that a married woman has to cover her hair in front of everybody, she doesn't have to cover her hair in front of her husband. So he's sitting there to read Kriyashma, and his wife walks by, her hair is uncovered. Is he allowed to continue reading Kriyashma, or does he have to stop? So the Mechaber says that even his wife, in other words, this is a place that's traditionally covered. It's uncovering is a lack of modesty, not in the home, of course, but it's assumed it will be distracting for the husband. Paul says the Mechaber, Besula Shadarka Leilech Kuro Sarosh Mutter. So it's presumably it's mutter for them to do that, and it's certainly mutter to read Kriyashma. So if it's a single woman, then it's not a problem. His daughter. Well, that's an interesting question. His daughter when she's single. Yes. So then the Rama says, "V'hu adin hasaro shalashim shemagilas latzeis michutz l'tzmason." Any hair that normally might come out from underneath, I'll call it her beret. That, how much that is, she doesn't say, but whatever is normally, that might stick out. So he says that that's not a problem reading Kriyashma either. Why? Because that's not considered a makom hamachusah shibagof. And then the Ramah says, the kol shekein seir nachas, a shekel, we call pan, same as pan nachas, meaning another woman's hair that is somehow on top of her head, afilu darka lekat lechas, even if it's normal to cover the shekel, and that you will find this in certain Hasidic communities where the women will wear a shekel and then wear a hat on top of it. There, they let hair stick out of the shekel, but if you go into Satan and you see a woman there with some of her hair coming out from underneath her hat, that's not real hair. That's a shekel with a hat on top of it. So now it's unclear, right? It's unclear at this point to what extent this is a question of distraction. One could read the Shulchan Aruch and argue that this is not a question of them being distracted, but simply because something is typically supposed to be covered, so it is considered a covered place in the body, makom mechusas shebeguf, and therefore you're not allowed to be kriyashma kinegdo. The problem is that wouldn't explain why a woman in private,
in a courtyard,
and her husband can't read kriyashma. Unless you say that there is an element of distraction, but then you have to explain why is it that a single woman's hair is less distracting. This is the picture of the day before her wedding. This is the picture of the day after her wedding. And the only explanation I can get is that your awareness that they're supposed to be covering their hair, I'll call it the allure of the forbidden fruit. And now that you know that it's not appropriate to be uncovered, so now you relate to it in a different fashion. I'm not sure else how to explain
that. But at a wedding, a lot of the women don't cover their hair right away, right?
So the reason for that, Chacham Ovadia, I think, has a tshuva where he explains the Sephardic practice, which I think he says they don't do yichud until after the wedding. And the halacha is by a sota, is that a woman who has not yet had sex with her husband cannot be subject to the sota ritual. I mean, if she cheated, she gets divorced. But if he suspects her and he warns her, he can't use the sota ritual. He just has to divorce her. Because he did it that way, he might even have to pay. I'm not sure if it's super or not. But bottom line is, you can't have the sota ritual for a woman who has not yet slept with her husband, because it has to be vayitain ishvach eshchavto mi baladei ishech. Aside from your husband, in that case, it means, it's not the simple reading of the pasuk, but it means she's already cohabited with her husband. So I think he says that the Sardi weddings, they don't cover their hair because they're not eligible yet for the, I mean, funny to say that. They're not theoretically eligible to be sotah, and therefore they don't, since the source is Sufara Sosha, they don't have to cover it. And I think because I guess clear from the Gemara, then Arusa didn't have to, you know, it seems that Arusa didn't necessarily have to cover her hair. Ashkenazi practice, I'm assuming, I've never seen anybody address this explicitly, is predicated upon the notion that even though we have yichud before, our assumption is that it's still mivaladeh, it's still not mivaladeh. Even though the yichud has to be, you know, seclusion with enough time in theory to consummate the marriage, you don't assume that the bride and the groom are consummating the marriage.
It's a balancing act. You also have to visit the Tamea Chosim Bakala. So, you know, and then you have the Tuba Av. What is more precious than women dancing?
There's a single woman. They need to make shidduchim.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm saying there's an Indian to get married and to be involved with the mitzvah.
Listen, there are so many things that a woman has to wear, you know, that are probably not the most comfortable things at a wedding. If she had to cover her hair, that would just be, you know, one little more thing on top of it. I don't think that would be the end of the world. But we're assuming that it's mutter. We're assuming it's mutter because it's truly not necessary. If a caller came to me and said, Rebbe, am I supposed to cover my hair at the wedding? The answer is no.
I'm going
to
say something controversial. The opposite. I think that part of the Sameach Hasmat Kavod is for people to say, your bride looks so beautiful. And that mitzvah, when you're osek the mitzvah, you're not thinking, I wish that I could commit
a
raya.
So I'm not going to respond to that. I'm going to move on. Okay.
You don't have to say you're not responding.
Okay.
You just move on.
Okay.
All right? It's the mitzvah of the Sameach Hasmat Kavod. People are
osteik
with a mitzvah, not necessarily
osteik by a bear. All right. So now I wanted to take a look at the machlokes achronim, how to relate to hair, this man has said with respect to kriyashma. Now, there is a machlokes that we've shown already that the Aruch HaShulchan will point out that the issue of hair in the Gemara, say abe isha erva, and kol be isha erva has nothing to do with kriyashma. And if you happen to be saying Kriya Shema, and a woman walks by, and she is, you know, belting out, you know, the chorus for Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, or some opera, I don't really know any operas, so let her know. She's belting out some opera there. Okay. There are some Rishonim who say that it doesn't matter, that the Gemara here is not talking about during Kriya Shema. If you happen to hear a woman, obviously you shouldn't go into the Metropolitan Opera, when the woman is singing, and we preach on that, but if you have to be walking, if the opera singer is walking by, and you're incidentally hearing it, or a woman is walking by with her hair uncovered, or it's your wife, the Chacham didn't impose upon you not to read Kriya Shema, because that's too much of an imposition, right? In other words, yes, you're not supposed to look at it, it's not supposed to be uncovered, it's not supposed to be sung, this and that, but Legabe Kriya Shema, they didn't want to impose all these restrictions, and that the Gemara Barachos only relates to general practice, having nothing to do with Shema. However, we assume, as you saw the Shulchan Aruch just said, that in fact the Gemara Brachos does apply, not just as a general principle, Seir and Kol Bish Erev, but it applies to Kriya Shema. So, the Mishnah Berurah writes, Shadar Kalasas. He writes, Vafilum ein darka lechatsoso rak bishuk, velo bebayis ubechatser, even if it's hair that would normally only be covered when out in public, but not in the house or the chatser, it's still considered erva. If a osur sham likros mega in the stalak tafrehim, you're not allowed to read when that part of the hair is exposed. Vidao the afilo im derech isha zel v'chaver osel, but osamachom leilach v'kimei arosh v'shok. Kederech haprutzos, even if the practice of this woman and her friends in that place, and all the women in that town, you might have said Lithuania early 20th century. Was to go with her hair uncovered to derech haprutzos, the way the immodest women go, usher. It's still usher, and usher to read Kriya Shema. Uchamol in and gilu shoka, the usher of whole godness. Just as with regards to shok, which is the lower leg, it's usher under all circumstances. Now again, it's not clear how, whether we've demonstrated this either.
The calf.
Right? In other words, how do you know that that's true? Maybe that's also what would be a norm. Not everybody agrees with that. Because they are obligated, al-pidin, to cover the hair. V'gam kol b'dosh Yisrael ha'malchikos v'das Moshe nisharos mizeh mimos avosenu me'olam v'ata. All the truly from women from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu onward are careful about this, and therefore b'chalal erbuhi it is considered erba, but also liklos kinegon, and you're not allowed to read when you know opposite it. It sounds almost from the Mishnah Berurah that what makes it erba is the obligation to cover. V'lo ba l'ma'id, it only excludes in the Shulchan Aruch when it says shidarek alachatosa, rach b'sulo shemutaros leilich b'rosh polua, o kigon seir hayotze mi'chutzlis masam, either single women going with their hairs completely uncovered, or married women with whatever amount of hair sticks out, shezet honle b'minah ha'makomos. That depends upon the minah. Sheminha benos Yisrael b'zeh ha'makom li'zahir shelo la'tzeh ha'filu ma'at minama'at, chutzla kishureha. If the minhag in that place is to not let a single strand of hair show, memela b'chlal erbahi also likros kinegba. Think about, by the way, if you want to understand this culturally, think about the that episode in Schnitzel, right? When he paints the picture and he has a little thing of his mother, he has a picture of his late mother, and a little lock, a tiny little thing comes out in the front that he paints it there, and his father goes crazy. Right? His father goes crazy because it's a sociological issue, right? The really firm woman would not let any hair show. So the Mishnah Berurah says, if that's the case, it's also lit lo kinecta. The imlaav mutar, the chevan shiragizim bohem, leka herhura uchadu lekana. So if it's normal, there's no hair, and apparently it's not an erva either. Okay. One might explain the Mishnah Berurah, even though it's not impossible, it's a little difficult. Clearly, we prohibit erva under certain circumstances, even though there's no problem of erva. A woman and another woman, or a man and another man, two men, where one of them is completely unclothed, two women the same thing, not well, neither one can read Kriya Shema Tehillah. Why? It's not bad hirurim if you're alone with yourself and you're unclothed, right? It's not a question of hirur here, it's erva. So there certainly is a notion of erva that's independent of hirur. It's just this funny category that it can depend upon, some of it can depend upon the minhag, and it's a little bit difficult. Okay. But certainly the two exist independently, and that's how the Mishnah Berurah presents it. If it's normal for it to be covered in public, that's called erva. Independent of hirur. Even her husband can't read Kriya Shema. And if it's something that would cause, I mean, I don't know what else would you would, where else you would have it. But if it's something that's not normally covered and there's no hirur, so then that's not a problem. The Aruch HaShulchan has a different take than the Mishnah Berurah, and the position that the Aruch HaShulchan will present is also the position of Ramosha and his Tshuva. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, Kostu Rabbo Seinu, the last source, Bale HaShulchan Aruch HaSifei.
When is he writing this, Rabbi?
Mishnah Berurah?
For both Mishnah Berurah.
They're both probably late 19th century, maybe very early 20th. The Aruch HaShulchan, the Aruch HaShulchan saw the Mishnah Berurah. He never quotes it by name, but some of his comments you can tell are a response. The Aruch HaShulchan was published, I think, over a longer period of time, and a lot of it, even after he died, didn't see the light till much later.
Who's older?
I think the Aruch HaShulchan was older. I'm not 100% sure. The Mishnah Berurah, I think, was published really late 19th, early 20th century. I can go back and get the date, that's the time period. Yeah. It's a time period where in Lithuania, married women, including probably not, I don't want to say most, I don't know, it might be most, Rosh Yeshiva's wives were not covering it. In other words, Soloveitchik's wife was not an outlier. Maybe when it came to America and things changed, she might have been, but in Europe, she was not an outlier. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, again, Kostu Rabbo Seinu Bale HaShulchan Aruch HaSifei, Seir Shel Isha Shidarka L'Chasoso, Oster Mikros Kinecho, Hafilu Isha. Abo Betulo Shidarka Melech, Kuo Sarosh Mutavu Adin Asar Shol Nashu Dragim Mosei Chus Mitzmosan, Nekol Shekein Seir Nachas Hafilu Darka L'Chasos. Ad Kamishon. That's the quote. We read that. Zesh Nisbar Ve'evan Ezeh, Simen Chafalot, Vigan Tenuyos Lo Yelcho Begibu Herosh. Remember that law we read earlier? In Evan Ezra, the Machaber said that women have to cover their hair, married women and Pnuyos, single woman. Zehu bebeulos, kemalamanos grushos, below besulos. Some of the Achronim in Evan Ezra suggest, it means a single woman who's a virgin, does not need to cover her hair. But if she's not, then the typical case we're hoping is that divorcee or a widow. But theoretically, it should be true even if it's a woman who is not a virgin even before marriage. So they have to cover their hair. However, the yesh misha kasav the af pesula lo telech kishesahar osas the turos below kulos. The Magen Avraham here suggests that even a single woman who's a virgin, who's a pesula, should not go with her hair unbraided, because that is one meaning, one definition of perua rosh. I don't think that's the practice in our community, but our Haredi communities, probably their sharim, where the girls go out with their hair braided.
Isn't that the Shulchan Aruch? Isn't that the Shulchan Aruch?
Depends how you read Pruya. Listen, if you're asking me, there's no question the Magen Avraham is correct. I don't think Pruya means a non-desula.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And you have to understand something also. There's fundamentally a machlokas that we've shown them here, which I don't think they highlight. The Mechaber's quotation in the Shulchan Aruch, an answer I believe is the Rambam. Because the Rambam's position, the simple interpretation of the Rambam, is all women have to cover their hair.
Right.
Where our tradition is really coming from is from Chachmei Ashkenaz, where the Rush and other Rishonim write that single women who don't typically cover their hair, it's not an error problem. They don't distinguish between Pnuya versus Basula, etc. I think this attempt to how do you reconcile what the Mechaber's position was one thing, I think it's very clear Menag Ashkenaz Al Pidin is single women don't have to cover at all. They don't have to braid their hair either. And that is very widespread Menag. There are Haredi communities which do braid their hair, but there are plenty of very, very from Jews where the married women cover every strand of hair and the daughters don't cover their hair at all and don't braid their hair. The Yesh Omen, he says that the Chatzer Mutaros Kalanashim Gaman Asuos Leilech Begimei Rosh. Now those who say that in the Chatzer, all women, including married women, can cover their hair. We saw what the source was in the Gemara. And then he says that the women follow the Minhag HaMakom. If you move from one place to another and you're moving there permanently, you take on the new Minhag. Sif Kotam Zayin, the last paragraph. V'ata bo'u unitzaveach al pirtos doreinu. Let us come now and shry about the breaks and the breaches in our generation. Because of our great sin, Shanim Rabos, this is many years already, that the daughters of Israel have become lax and in this Avera, the Hochos the Gibli Harosh, they go married women with their hair uncovered. The Homash et Saku al Zer, everything that the Rabbonim have screamed about, who Lola Ezer, the Lola Hoil. And I don't know what he means in the next line, the Atah, Pasa Sahan is Pahas. Now the mega has spread. The married women go with their hair just like the single woman. I don't know what he means. How that's different than the previous line. Oy lanu she'olta b'yameinu kach. Woe to us that this has been our lot in our generation. Okay. After all that expression of great spiritual anguish, nihu, however, I'll call upon him. He says he thinks it's permissible to make brachos in the presence of their hair. Most of them walk like that. That's like the places in the body that are normally uncovered. Everything we've said about Erva and the restrictions, only by things that are normally not normally covered or not normally uncovered. When it comes to a besula, who are normally they don't cover their hair, there's no problem with hair, not a problem. Since the married women do the same things as the Aruch HaShulchan, memela telekahiru. So, okay, it's a terrible thing they don't cover their hair, but the reality is, at least for the purposes of Kriya Shema, that isn't a problem. This is the position of the Aruch HaShulchan, the position of Rav Moshe Feinstein against the Mishnah Berurah Jew. And I think that it's hard to talk about widespread practice in our community because lots and lots of married women in our community don't cover their hair. But I think that this is the accepted practice, even for people whose wives do cover their hair or are mocked on it. They don't assume that they can't recite Varn Shibakusha when a married woman's hair is uncovered. In a way that they wouldn't say with regards to certain other things. If there were certain kinds of dress that was inappropriate, then then we would say one shouldn't do it. I Reshefta told us a story many, many years ago, that the Rav, sometimes when he had a wedding and if the bride's dress were not so appropriate, the Rav would always ask for a sitter. He wouldn't close his eyes. He wouldn't need a hefsek. He would ask for a sitter. And it's like, Rabbi Salvechik, you don't know the brachas? I knew the brachas, but he'd hold the sitter up in front of him when he would make the brachas of it, the brachas nisuin, brachas erisin, because he felt it was important that you have to have a hefsek. Not enough. I don't know if we're going to encounter that. What if you close your eyes? Is that sufficient for that? I'm not sure that it's clear that that's sufficient. So there can be situations of error today that are a concern. But with regards to hair, we don't assume that it's an issue. And I'll just conclude with the note that I mentioned earlier. If you look in the brackets of the Aruch HaShulchan, he just writes that the Aruch HaShulchan was not, it gives you a lot more, I'll call lundus, a lot more theory than the Mishnah Berurah does. That's why people don't like the Aruch HaShulchan. It's not easy to use like the Mishnah Berurah. Or not as easy. He gives you long essays explaining from the basics all of the roots of the law, which I know may sound like a great idea, Josh, but that's assuming you want to take the time to go through it. If you want a quick answer, the Mishnah Berurah, you look in the line of Shulchan Aruch, you look in the Mishnah Berurah, the final bottom line, and that's really quick. So the Aruch HaShulchan just adds here that Harif HaRambam, Hishmitu Lagamrei Din Seir V'Kol. They left out, in Hukriyashma, they don't talk about hair or kol, Hishim Desirolei, the Lav Mukriyashma Idma. That the issue of Seir and kol don't apply by Kriyashma. In other words, because it is in too much of an imposition, so that is the other opinion. We don't pass it that way. So by Seir, in principle, we would say that it would be a problem reading Kriyashma, except for by Seir, we don't assume that it's a problem. Okay, any questions?
Yeah, one question from the phone, Rabbi Weider. So you said, 40-ish minutes ago that virtually no achronim conclude that not covering your hair at all is halakhically acceptable. Yeah. But then you said about 6 minutes ago, and I'm sure you get asked this question several times a year, that, only one generation ago, the wives of many gedolim did not cover their hair. Right. So how are those two mitzvahs reconciled with one another?
So, look, there's a story. Rabbi Lipstein might know the story, but he might have heard the story before. Maybe he heard it firsthand. I'm told a story that a particularly prominent pulpit rabbi, who was contributing much to Kal Yisrael, was a Talmud of the Rav, and he went while he was getting married, and he asked the Rav, does my wife need to cover hair? And the Rav told him, yes. To which he apparently had the gumption to ask about the Rav's wife. And the Rav, and the answer, as the story is told, is that she's not going to listen to him. I don't know, I don't know, I know that story only like second or third hand, but I think that, clearly, Marshall, this was not the same thing as other kinds of things. We all understand the svara of this minority opinion, but, apparently, if the story is correct, with the Rav, and I know we used to think that it's not, the Rav, it was not like he was going to divorce his wife over this issue, because it's not in the behavior, and the reason why the Mishnah says that you can divorce your wife, and I would say this is an, I would say even though a woman has to marry and has to cover her hair, it's absolutely not grounds for divorce, without paying suba, and it's not grounds for divorce, it's not hazeh, insisting wife take a get, because it's not a violation of tzniyus, of das yehudis. Because so many, women who are from other, in all other respects, happen not to do this. So, on the one hand, I'm not going to say, it may be that you're required to do it, but we're not going to say that it's breaching communal norms. So I think that, it's a rare, look, the other thing I'd like to say is that had Hitler invaded Hungary first, in Poland last, and Hungarian Jewry suffered destruction to the extent that Polish Jewry did, and instead of the Satmar coming over and the Hungarian Jewry coming over in the late 40s and 50s to the United States and reinvigorating Orthodoxy in a certain direction, had the reverse happened, it could be, I'm not sure if this is where Israel would have played into this, it could be that today the Poskim would just justify the minhag because married women aren't covered there. Obviously, it must be mutter because, right? You're correct, Marshall, that the typical response, especially if someone like Aruch HaShulchan, always was to say, if Benos Yisrael are doing this, it must be okay. I suspect that he doesn't, because when it happens in your generation or a generation before, you're not willing to say, well, this is mutter, because you remember when it was awesome. If it happened 200 years ago, and it's been doing it for 200 years, So then the classic response is, it must be Mutter, so why is it Mutter? So if I came back from Mars in 200 years from now, you know, in Choni Hamadiel style, 70 years from now, and I saw that the most Haredi women weren't covering their hair, I could write a tshuva justifying, you know, in this classic tradition of post-Kedis Yisrael, why is that its mother? But for some reason, you're asked, it's more a sociological, historical question, why that didn't happen, but the post-Kedis were not willing to give their imprimatur to this practice. So.
Okay. And by the way, all their husbands will be wearing shorts.
What's that? Very good.
But Rabbi Weider, not now because we're a little bit late, but maybe the next time we meet, I will tell you what the Rav said to me when I asked him a question for somebody else.
Okay.
His answer to me. It was not a simple answer, so now is not the time for it. But it was one of the most interesting.
That's a cliffhanger.
Interesting exchanges that I've ever had with the Rav.
Okay, I look forward to it, and I guess everybody's going to be back next week, even if I bore them in cheer today.
Oh, Mir Tasha.
Thank you.
Okay.